Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
G'day and welcome to the Dom Harvey Podcast. This episode sponsored by Radix. Coming up, Simone Meyer.
Well, Richie, he would never give up. I think I did say to him once he's quite clumsy. I would express him as like, oh, he keeps falling over in the woods. And I was like, you just got rugby withdrawals. So you just bump into those trees to knock something over. I don't know if he found it funny at the time, but I had to laugh.
Yeah, Simone Meyer. Most of you probably won't know the name, but boy, are you in for a treat. Simone is, plain and simply, a multi-sport savage. She's won the famous Coast to Coast event four times after moving to New Zealand from Germany at 20 years old, unable to speak any English. She was also a teammate in one of those God Zone events with Richie McCaw and was a contestant on the reality TV show Tracked with Vinnie Jones as the host. But what makes Simone's story special is the adversity. Before she came here and experienced the highest of highs in sport, she had to endure very low lows growing up, events which culminated in Simone spending a full year in rehab for an eating disorder and self-harm. Because of all the themes we discuss, this episode needs to come with a friendly warning, and I'll include a list of resources and numbers available to call in New Zealand if you feel the need to talk to a professional. If you want to find this list of resources, you will find that in the show notes. I genuinely loved getting to know Simone, and I know you guys will too. A lot of the listeners will be fans of Simone's already, maybe from the multi-sport community, but I reckon most listeners will be learning about this absolute weapon for the very first time, which is so cool. I don't want to jinx it or anything, but at the time of this podcast going out, she is deep in training, trying to win an unprecedented fifth Coast to Coast in a couple of weeks. A few women have won it four times, but never an elusive fifth, so good luck, Simone. We wish you well. This episode was made entirely possible by the team at Radix. Radix sponsor Simone and took care of all her travel arrangements for this chat. We both gush about how much we love Radix products in this chat. Simone is one of the elite community who have known about Radix stuff for years. High performance sports people have been using their stuff for ages. It's only now that us regular people are learning about this incredible Kiwi creation from Hamilton. Protein powders, smoothie recovery powders, and the best freeze-dried meals in the world. If you want 2024 to be the year that you bring your health and fitness goals to life, Radix can help. Check them out, radixnutrition.co.nz. And Radix is spelled R-A-D-I-X. Elephant in the room, this is an ad. And Radix are paying me to say nice things about them. But I genuinely mean what I say. I was a fan before they sponsored the podcast, and I'll be a fan for life. Their products simply are the best. RadixNutrition.co.nz. Okay, without further ado, here we are. Simone Meyer on the Dom Harvey Podcast. Let's go.
Thanks for having... Well, thanks. Can we cut this?
Oh, no. This is it. This is it. We're on. We're live. This is Simone Meyer, four times Kathmandu Multisport World Champion. You've done God Zone events. You've raced all around the world. You're an absolute... You're bossing it. You're a savage. And you're 43 years old. And this is part of what I find exciting about your story. It's like... you just seem to keep getting better with age.
Yeah, if you look at the piece of paper, yeah, Kim's
looks like that. So where do you think you are? If it's like a mountain peak, where do you think you are? Are you on the way up to the apex? Are you at the apex, or are you on the downward slide now?
I think I'm maybe just before the apex. I think that's how I feel. I try and scrape the last little piece of things to the top of the summit, like the Everest. You know, there's not much left, but I feel like I can hoover out a little bit more, and then I think I'm happy. Yeah.
Yeah, this is what I love about this the sport that you're in, this endurance sport. It sort of favors persistence and patience and time. You know, so you do sort of get to middle age before you sort of reach your peak, which is really exciting. It's cool.
Yeah, I don't know if I I feel like, oh, imagine if I would have done all these things 10 years earlier, where I could have been. Now I feel like, oh, I'm such a, not old, but if you look at the number, I'm 43 years young, I say it. But it's quite, well, it is a bit old, but it's also, I guess, I don't know, it feels a bit odd, but I feel like the 40 is maybe the new 30 now.
That's what they say. And I'm 50 now, so I'm like 50 is the new 40.
Yeah.
Whatever age you are, you wind it back 10 years, don't you? But the intriguing thing about you and why I thought you'd be an amazing podcast guest is if we use like the mountaintop analogy again. So your highs in life have been just crazy high, and your lows your rock bottoms have been just so low as well. It's like a life of extremities, and it's amazing. So to see where you are now from where you've come from, it's a remarkable story, and it's fantastic, and it's wonderful to have you here today.
Oh, thank you.
So you moved to New Zealand to Wanaka in your 20s, mid-20s?
27 I was, just turned 27.
And you couldn't speak English?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, I would come with a few words, and I remember people ask me, how are you doing? You know, as I said, they walk past you and I say hi, hello, greet them, and they're like, how are you doing? And I start talking to them and they just walk past me, and I was like, you just ask me how I'm doing. You want to hear actually, you know, what I'm doing. So that was one thing. Or I would go to the checkout and they, again, how I'm doing, and I tell them how old I am. Oh, I'm 27. How are you doing? You know, like, totally misunderstood what they're asking me to do.
Yeah. There must be, like, the most, you know, when you're a kid, it's easy to learn new things and pick things up just easily, and it doesn't feel like learning. But when you're an adult, like, and you're 27 years old, I can't imagine it's easy going to a new country and learning a brand new language. It's got to be fucking difficult.
Yeah, it was. I guess it was my initiative thought, or why I came over here, was I was 26 and I hit a point where I'm like, oh, I'm so sick of this not speaking a second language, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I had English at school, like from year, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth class, you have English for the entire life, till you finish school. And I just struggled so much at school, and I guess maybe because we brought up with only one language at home, we never went on a holiday where we would speak a second language, so I guess no one felt the need to, you know. And even at school, it wasn't my major focus. I was more the sporty, arty girl, and I guess also with my grammar, I probably had severe highly dyslexia because I still struggle with the grammar or reading or putting it all into the right, how do you say, language and grammar. Anyway, and then by just traveling with your mates to, you know, when you get older in your teenager life and you go to Italy or wherever, Spain, and they're all chatting away and I'm the only one that just sits there and kind of feels dumb and like, I don't know. You know, you feel a bit kind of not useless but embarrassed, but also like, that's where I realized, oh my God, I should have done what the teacher told me. You need to go home and do when you learn your vocabularies. And what did I do? I mean, I did my homeworks, but I probably went home, did my homeworks, and then I was out and about just training and, you know, enjoying sports. That was my purpose.
So you legit only spoke German, no other languages? Most people, I don't know, I'm probably generalizing here, but most people I've met in Europe seem to speak like one core language, and then bits and pieces of other languages. Whereas here in New Zealand, everyone speaks English, and that's for the most part it.
Yeah,
you might get some people that know like a little bit of Māori or maybe a little bit of French from school, but most people only have one language here. So you were the same.
Pretty much. Yeah, and in Germany, it's actually compulsory. You have to learn English, but I just really struggled. I just didn't. Yeah, and then anyway, then I got 26, and I said, right, that's it. I'm gonna do it myself. I'm going to jump into the deep end. I don't want any friends and family. I broke up with my boyfriend at the time. It's like, I'm going to go by myself. It's like, oh, we can have a distant thing. It's like, no, I don't want a distant thing. I just have to do this. And I don't know, because I didn't want someone being back in Germany waiting for me. You know, a year or even 6 months, it's such a long time. 100% we're going to grow in different directions. I don't want any attachment, and I don't want him to be attached if someone pops around. You know what I mean? So anyway, so I packed up everything. I also had this feeling inside that I just need to leave, and I probably had another purpose, which we might touch on later.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah. I thought we'll focus on the just your outstanding athletic achievements here in New Zealand. Because you forgot one to say.
What's that? I won the Adventure Race World Championships last year with Team Avea.
We can get into all that, but I think we need to like break it down so that people have got an understanding of what these events are and what they entail. There's a lot to it, but the bottom line is you're a savage.
A savage.
Right. You're an absolute beast, like a weapon out there. Hey, like what you've done is just unthinkable, really.
Oh, I guess it keeps me occupied.
first of all, before we get into it, I noticed you're wearing a Radix T-shirt. I'm a Radix fan as well. They've been sponsoring this podcast for the best part of a year now.
Yeah.
How did that association come about?
Radix Audio, I'm proudly sponsored by Radix too, which is great. That came about, I guess, I was racing in China with my teammate Sam Clark at the time in 2018, I think. And he was sponsored by Radix. And he brought all the meals over for the team. And it was incredible because usually China is always... I mean, I love China, but the food, you just have to be a bit more careful. And yeah, so anyway, we had these Radix meals and it was just mind-blowing how... We didn't get sick, which is a major bonus, not to get sick and have no sick teammates. We also, while we were racing, because they're quite extreme situations, like it's like a stage race where you go for 4 or 5 days sometimes, you sleep in between. But, you know, the nutrition is a key element of recovery, as you probably know as a runner, you know, and your overall well-being. And what we all found, that we recovered much better and... We also didn't come back with such a craving. You know, usually you feel like you've been through the mincer, but it just balanced us really well, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, I, by the way, thank you for bringing up that I'm a runner. it's worth pointing out that the longest I've done is like a 50K run. I'm generally marathons. But one thing which I've found particularly amazing with Radix is... Yeah, there's a book I've been reading, a Navy SEAL book called Extreme Ownership, and it's about just owning absolutely every possible scenario and taking it on yourself.
Yeah.
And where that fits into Radix with me is, for example, recently I went to Sydney for the marathon in September. And when you're staying in a hotel, you don't know what you're going to, you don't know if you're going to have access to a toaster or a microwave for your porridge or whatever. So if I take the Radix breakfast with me, I know that as long as there's a tap with running water, I'm going to be able to fuel myself in a way that my body's become accustomed to for the event ahead of me, not leaving anything to chance. And it's just so convenient and so bloody good.
It is basically exactly the same when we go to China. You just never know, and especially, or even with the water, you don't even know what water you're going to get. So, but if you get a bottled water and you put it in the jug to boil it, then you're pretty safe. And that's even, I rolled it with this still, like last night on my way up to Christchurch, I had 2 Radix meals. I just made them on the side of the road because I was starving. I was running late and I was like, I just don't have time. And it's just good because I know what I get. It's pretty good nutrition, ticks all the boxes, it's really healthy, there's no additives, no fillings, no sugar, like no crap in it. It's really good ingredients. Mm. Like, anyway, sorry, I don't want to rant on it, but they are.
it's really good. It's like, I tell people about it and they're like, yeah, well, you're sponsored, but it's like, no, even if I wasn't sponsored, I'd still be talking about this shit. Rip the bag open and it turns into a bowl. Even if you don't have a spoon, you can, if there's enough water in there, you can drink it.
And what I guess like the most, it adds up my values, what I stand for and what I believe in. Like, I feel like there's a good match, like we have a similar, probably the same vision, and you know, like the whole overall picture, like we want to be healthy, we want to eat healthy, we want to look after our well-being, and we want to make it affordable. So these meals, they are actually affordable, so much rather than, I don't want to brag about McDonald's, but you know, like you go in the supermarket and it's well invested, so anyway, it's for everybody, not just athletes. That's what I want to say.
it's great. And have you had a lot to do with the team? Like, the team there are incredible, and when you meet the team and you get on the same page as them and you see what their goals and objectives are, it's this is a brand I can get behind.
They're just always forward thinking or evolving, and that's, I guess, reflects me as well. I want to evolve, I want to learn, I want to grow, I want to do the best I can. How can we make this happen, you know? I don't want to be just stuck, I've done this now. And no, there's so much more. And I guess you see that with their packaging now, you know, it's less waste, they make it more recyclable, and probably in the near future it will be compostable. I don't know, but you know, and I like that too. Like, we need to look at our out for our planet and, you know, the future.
Compostable packaging. It's like you're coming up with a five-year plan for the company.
They are pretty amazing.
Yeah, they are. They are. Okay, so let's talk about your athletic achievements. First of all, what's the God Zone event? Is that the one that Richie McCaw does?
Oh, my God, yeah. So, yeah, Richie McCaw, the gods. I raced with Richie McCaw in 2000, I think, 21.
You kicked his ass?
No, he was my teammate.
Oh, he's in your team?
He was in my team, and we came second with Richie. Second of all.
Right, so what is God Zone? Because I'm guessing there's a lot of people watching this or listening to this.
Yes, yeah, sorry. So I guess there's a bit of difference between adventure racing and multisport. I guess what they have in common, they're all in nature, outdoors, in the mountains, you know. Yeah, but an adventure race is basically a race where you go from A to B or A to Z, and you've given a map with control points, and you have a navigator, and you go all day, all night, and no one tells you what to do. You know, well, you got given the lengths, like you have like a 200K cycle length or even a 122K run / hike and kayaking, so it's all in nature, and you have all sorts of elements with abseiling, climbing. So you kind of have to be sort of an all-rounder, sort of. But you don't have to, how do you say, like you definitely need a navigator because you have to navigate. And it's really old school. There's no GPS. There's no technical devices allowed. And with your team of four, so it's always a team of four, and the rules is usually three guys and a girl. And you, I guess, try and be the make your way as quick as possible from A to the finish line, collecting these controls. And
it's amazing.
Yeah. So you don't really sleep much. So it's probably I feel a bit like, must be like when you have a baby, you know, the first few weeks or months or years, they talk about sleep deprivation, the moms. Probably similar to that.
Extent. Yeah, the only difference is, yeah, God's only played, don't end up with cracked nipples, maybe. Yeah. So teams of four. Yeah. So what were you, I'm guessing you picked different teammates for their strengths or whatever?
Yes.
So, like, what did Richie bring to the team?
Well, Richie.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It was actually originally it was Richie's team, and that kind of got stripped away week by week. Someone got injured, someone couldn't, and then we had that period with lockdown. So the last one couldn't get out from Auckland because they shut Auckland down. And so it was him. He was the last one standing, and even his navigator got stripped away. Mm. But he's actually a really good navigator himself. And I guess his key element is, I don't know much about rugby, but what I've experienced with him, he's actually a great team player and a really good leader as such. Like, quite fascinating. Mm. Like, just...
You've had a ringside seat, I guess, to Richie McCaw and his leadership post-rugby. But and it's his leadership is something that most of us, you know, very few New Zealanders would have got to experience during his 148 tests. Mm. But what do you mean? Can you think of any examples? Is he just good at keeping cool under pressure?
He's very cool, and he would never give up, no matter how many stumbles. I think I did say to him once he's quite clumsy. I would express him as like, dish, dish, or he keeps falling over in the woods. And I was like, you just got rugby with trolls. You just bump into those trees to knock something over. I don't know if he found it funny at the time, but I had to laugh.
How could you not find it funny?
You know, he had some good words of wisdom, which I can't recall it right now. But while we were walking, and we were walking a lot for a long time, we had some deep, meaningful conversations, and that was just fascinating. So here, because I had no idea about him. I know he was a rugby legend, you know, and even when you go shopping with him, there were people coming and, hey, Richie, and wanted an autograph and blah, blah. And I was like, man, we are under time pressure, you know, like, we need to get out of here. But anyway, he is quite kind and he takes the time, and but I had no idea till I saw it with my own eyes what an impact, I guess, he has on the people and how well-respected he is. And you know what I mean? Like, So yeah, it was an honor to race with him. Yeah. I thought at some point we might kill him, but like, oh God, that would be a disaster.
So in these Godzone events, so you're allowed to sleep if you want, but if you sleep, obviously you're not making any sort of movement. So as a team, do you decide to have a 15-minute nap, 20-minute nap, or?
Yeah, there are times we had. Sometimes they have compulsory dark zones, like you can't go on the wild river. So you have to stay there for the whole night, you know, and that's a good thing to know. Then you know you've got a good quality sleep. You've got 8 hours of resting. So sometimes you have to push for 2 days to get there, but then you have 8 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that doesn't happen. And you have to structure with your team when you're going to sleep. Most teams, they probably don't have any sleep the first 24 hours because you're so awake and, you know, you just want to go. You are wired. But also it comes down to the guy that is in charge of the nav, or ideally want to have two people on the nav so they can share the load. And it is a bit based on how they feel. If they feel like they need to sleep, then, you know, you need to listen to them because they are your main components. Like if they get tired and make, you know, when you're more tired, you're more, so I guess it's easier to make nav mistakes. So, yeah.
Or get clumsier if you're rich.
Yeah. No, he was pretty good. And even when he would fall over, like we had one scenario, he climbed over the fence, he got caught, and he was falling down on the other side on these funny cut tree stumps. And I was like, oh my God, we might have to stitch him up. But he just got up, dusted off the dirt, and had a deep breath and marched on. I was like,
because when he was playing rugby, and it's one of the most successful All Black rugby careers ever, like 148 tests, at every single post-match conference, he had blood everywhere. Like, he's used to being cut. He's fine.
I know. I just had no idea. You know, I just, God, I couldn't even punch someone for, but he's like, ah, that hurts, you know. Like, I don't like pain as such anymore, if that makes sense.
Are you sure you're in the right sport then? It seems like a very painful
endurance
sport.
Pain, I guess it's different than, you know,
I don't know. And coast to coast, I suppose, is the thing that you've really sort of like pushed through and made a name for yourself here in New Zealand. Was that fair to say over recent years? So you won coast to coast, correct me if I'm wrong, but you won coast to coast in 2019, 2021, 2022, 2023, and you're training for the 2024 event.
Yes.
And you're the first woman to do a three-peat, three wins in a row?
I'm not sure. I should know. I've got the trophy at home, looking at it every day. No, I think there has been another woman that have done three. Oh, maybe not three in a row. That's a good point. I will do some homework. Mm. But I know there's Kathy Lynn. She won it 5 times.
So if you win in touch wood in 2024, that's 5 times as well.
Yes.
Wow, so that's a big goal. That's a lot of pressure on yourself.
Yeah, it's good though.
Keeps me
going. And, I know sometimes it's maybe a bit too much, but it's like, And then people are like, oh, you need to do 6 hours. I'm like, no. It's enough.
So you won in 2019, 2021, 2022. Yeah. What happened in 2020? That was a DNF. It did not finish.
Yeah.
What happened?
I got hypothermia. I had too many swims in the boat. I was paddling. And I decided that it's not safe enough for me to carry on because I would probably become a hazard or, you know, a danger zone for other competitors. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not fair enough. They trained all year for this event for me to potentially ruin. Mm-hmm. I was hypothermic before, way back in Germany in my early 20s. And I thought I don't want to go there anymore. Like I could have probably maybe carried on, but I was like, what's the point? Like, you know, it's not safe, you know, and it's not life threatening. I'm not dying here. Of course, it's a race, but at the end, it's just a race. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah, but that must have been heartbreaking for you, though.
Like, it was. It was a Oh, it was a bittersweet moment. It's probably not the worst moment, but one of these worst moments you don't wish on anyone. And I guess everyone that had to pull out of a race for whatever reason or had to give up, you know, whatever they trained again for their 6 months leading into it. It's definitely not an easy pill to swallow, but I feel like with all the, I wouldn't call them failures, but with all the things that didn't plan out or didn't go my way I wanted, I feel like I come out on the, I learn so much more than when things keep going the right way, if that makes sense.
100%. You learn so much more from your failures or your disappointments. You learn nothing from winning.
Yeah, it's nice, it's sweet, but then it doesn't last long. But when you feel like you really earned it, you know, everything came together, you worked on this for so long, you overcome a certain fear, whatever, and you nailed it. Like last year, for an example, or 2023, that was one of these moments where I'm like, I feel like I've succeeded now, not in everything, but, you know, like I can ride a bike really well, I can run over the pass really well. It didn't show because I had a hamstring injury, but, you know, if you put it all together, like, and then the pedaling was always my critical moment, and the first time ever I could deliver a good pedal. It wasn't fast, but I had the fastest time on the day as the individual woman, and they couldn't gain any time on me, and that was really rewarding because in the back in the days, it was like, oh, yeah, she keeps saying this every year, the same thing. She works on her pedaling, da-di-da-di-da. It's like, I have been working on my pedaling. And, you know, it's so frustrating when you have been, but on day, it just doesn't. You still scared or you can't put it together. And then finally, it just, I could deliver what I was saying. Mm. And I was like, oh, that win felt so much better than all the, I mean, all the wins are great and I'm grateful for it. And I worked hard for it. But that one felt complete. And then I was like, that's it. I was like, no more. I've done what I wanted. But here I am again.
Yeah, so sucker for punishment. So, yeah, for anyone that doesn't know the ins and outs of the Coast to Coast event, so you do the event known as the longest day.
Yes.
So that's bike, run, kayak, bike.
You run off the beach for 2.2Ks.
Yep.
And then you bike, I think 55Ks, and then you run over Gold's Pass. What's that, like
33.
Maybe 30, 33. I think it's maybe 30.
It's
around 30.
It's intense. I did that a few years ago, and it's like, a lot of it's not actually running. It's like, you're hopping over boulders and stuff.
You like imagine a goat.
It's intense, and it's very, very steep, and then it gets to a flat bit at the end, and you're running over like massive, massive river stones for maybe 8 or 9 kilometres.
Yeah, it's like a riverbed run, literally uphill, upstream. Yeah,
so you do that, and then after the run, you're back on the bike for a bit?
Yeah, for 15Ks, you bike on the main highway to the Mount White Bridge, and then you jump in the boat and pedal 7 kilometres down the Waimakariri River.
70.
7-0, yes. And then you jump back on your bike, and then you bike another 70 kilometers, probably one of the most boring roads here in New Zealand. It's so straight, but it's a good thing you don't have to think much about it. You just put your head down and ride for your life.
Yeah, so and to do it to win it, like how many hours is that? How many hours
it's
does it take?
12 and a half to 13 or 12 to 13, sort of in that.
Yeah, and that's going full noise, right? That's not fucking around at all. That's,
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's a lot. So that DNF in 2020, that's not your only adversity. Are you broke your back in 2009?
I did, yeah.
So this is amazing. So you broke your back, and then you came back and did the Ironman in Kona like a few months.
Oh, yeah.
So how did you break your back? What?
I was mountain biking, which is in Wanaka in a forest, which is called Sticky Forest. And I was going actually quite slow, but it's a very sort of narrow single track. And I just clipped the tree. I don't know why, bumped into the tree. And then I got pushed off, obviously, and then I heard this cracking noise. I was like, oh, my God. I was just lying on the ground. It's like, oh, that doesn't sound good. But I got back up, got back on the bike because I was up with a mate, and I caught up with him, and I was breathing heavy, you know, like carefully. And he was like, are you right? I was like, oh, I feel like, I don't know, I just had a crash. He was like, oh, okay, a crash. And I carried on biking with him down to Isletown. I said, oh, let's get out of Sticky. Let's just go flat. But every pedal stroke, I was like, man, this is not good. I said, I might have broken something. And so I decided to go home. And then my flatmate at the time, she was a nurse. And she was like, I was trying to stretch it out. And then I went up into the house and she's like, you look a bit weird. And I was like, yeah, I'm just a bit broken, or I don't know, a bit sore. And then she kind of did some, what is it called, like an exam. And it's like, oh, I think I called the doctor, which was a good friend of hers. So she just came around and was like, oh, I think you got a broken bone there. Broken bone.
that's terrible. Is there a chance you could have ended up like confined to a chair? Confined to it, like paralyzed?
Oh, no, it was just one of these vertebrae things. Wasn't too bad, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they're like, Jesus, you look way too good to have a broken back, yeah, you know? Like, yeah. I was like, yeah, you know? But I think that's, again, the body's an amazing thing when things happen, like you, and I guess because I've been sporty and physically, I don't know. I had broken ribs and I certainly was broken. I couldn't move. It was like, I'm dead, but I'm not dead. So anyway, I think it was bad, but not as bad, but it definitely put me out for a few months.
Yeah, but then you were back doing the full Ironman in Kona. Ironman, by the way, that's like a 4K swim, 160K bike ride?
A 3.8K swim, 180K bike.
Then a full marathon. Yeah.
But I guess it was this life, this childhood dream I had when I was a little child. I really wanted to do the Hawaiian Ironman, and it didn't matter if I'm pro or age group, but I just wanted to fulfill my dream. And in 2009 I qualified. The aim was to qualify in Taupo and do it all at once, and you know, like when you have a wish list, tick it off. And that's how it happened. And I had this amazing community in Wanaka. They actually raised a lot of funds for me that I can actually go, because I just didn't have that money to do, but they just, yeah, there was so much more involved than just me going and doing, you know, going to the World Champs. So, and I knew, because it's so expensive, it will be a one-off. I don't know how other people afford, unless you go, I guess that's why you have sponsors and yeah, they paid a big buck. But yeah, anyway, and because it's just me, like there's no family around that would say, you know, that I have support from, mom and, you know, not mom, I shouldn't bring mom and daddy, but you know, from the family.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah.
A one-way wagon, trying to wave my one, make my way through, achieve my childhood dream. Anyway, I didn't want to let these people down, and we booked already flights. I'm pretty sure we had everything booked, and we had this party. They organized a big party for me.
Yeah, like a Hawaiian thing.
Oh, it was amazing. Yeah, we raised over $3,000 on the door.
Oh, it was a big, cool.
Yeah. So it was cool, and I still had my, you know, I think we had 6 months still to get ready, but I knew with a broken bag it will be, you know, the aim was just to complete it. There was no, I mean, I still came third, but, you know, it wasn't pretty. Yeah.
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 Yeah, one thing I've learned from doing this podcast almost 2 years now and speaking to some amazing people is that there's only one cheat code for success, and that's hard work. Oh, it seems like that's the only, unfortunately, like everyone wants like an easy solution, right? And that's the only that's the only common thread with every high performer I've had here. Hard fucking work.
It is, and it's like sometimes I have to remind myself that's, you know, the outcome or the money might come later, because right now I'm just putting in the hard work, but there's no money. And it's like, oh my God, is it paying off? It will pay off. I'm 100% sure it will pay off.
Yeah, you just have to keep believing. Yeah. So what does an average training week look like for you? Just like an average boring one. So say...
Do you mean in terms of the average hours I do, or...?
Yeah, we'll start with hours.
It's probably...
Like on an average week and then a heavy
25.
Week. 25.
And heavy probably goes over 30, but it will be probably not many. There will be, won't be a huge amount of weeks of over 30 plus. Oh, don't lie, Simone.
So on a real heavy week, say 4 to 5 hours a day?
Yeah, like usually I have sort of easy days. Like for an example, this week would look like yesterday I had a big weekend, which wasn't probably scheduled from the coach, but I just played catch up, which I should probably not do. And sometimes because I'm coaching myself now, it's like, don't do this catch up game. But anyway, so yesterday I had an easy cycle, just a wind trainer session or an easy spin outside, and then just an easy run for an hour or whatever. And then today was supposed to be some track, you know, some speed running, and I can't remember, probably a pedal, I think. And tomorrow would be probably like a combination of maybe a bike, just kind of duration, and probably a run as well. And then on Thursday, usually I have like a workout on the bike and then a run off the bike. Oh my God, I'm giving my training away. Stop.
are you quite do you keep your cards quite close to your chest? Do you share your training on Strava or anything? Or
No, I don't.
Really?
But it's like I love sharing things, but I don't know many female athletes or pro athletes they share anything with other females. So
that's interesting.
It is interesting.
Wow, so it's not like an exchanging of information or ideas.
No. Like I talked to a triathlete the other day, how long did it take you to run a loop in Monica? And she's a pro, and you know how pros, they know everything down to the second. And she's like, I don't know. It's like, bullshit. You do know. I'm not naming it, but it's like, you do know. every down to the millisecond. You're so in tune with times and everything. Like,
that's funny. Anyway, so it's so competitive, eh?
Yeah, it's like, this is interesting. We're not even compatible because she's doing triathlon, whatever, you know, like ITU, whatever, and I'm doing multisport. Oh, sorry, I haven't actually answered your question before. With multisport, I guess it's different. Like, the coast is very different to an adventure race because it's on a day. It's just a few hours or sometimes 10, 11, 12 hours, but that's it. And it's a course that's marked, that's given. You just follow. You don't have to navigate. You don't have a compass. And the adventure side is, you know, adventure races, you have an old school compass. No GPS, nothing, no marked course. You find your way, the quickest way to the next checkpoint. Does it? Tick.
Yeah. How do you train for that? Is it just being, is it just training yourself for endurance and making sure you're okay with sleep deprivation or what?
Or with the God Zone, or with those adventure races. I guess what I have never learned anything like it and never heard about it when I was in Germany, but I guess that's the advantage. Not advantage, but probably in other countries too, that they grew up with orienteering and Rogaining, you know, and they get taught at school, I don't know, map reading and, you know, looking at the landscape and finding clues and having all these really cool games and being in nature. And I haven't had that since I came here. I was like, wow, this is actually, I that's something I really want to learn a bit more. After this, following the path.
and you managed to fit all this training in with like employment and stuff. So just up until just recently, you've been like a lifeguard in a pool in Wanaka?
Yeah, but I have to say the last probably three years, I do sort of cut down on work in the final month leading into the coast because I just feel like that's me personally. I just want to, I guess I get so... not obsessed, but I'm kind of driven and I want to give it my best. And someone said, just imagine you could give it your absolute, like, what would you, imagine you give it, you know, it's a big commitment, but I guess it's either all or nothing. You know, I'm all in or I can't do this half-half, which I've done in the past. I tried to do multisport and, you know, Ironman and triathlon and you just hover around on always kind of scratching, sort of being at the top level, but you not quite there because you just... and you're not committed 100%. You know, like, it's almost like an excuse, which is like, I hate excuses. So it's like, and then a few years ago, I just like, bang, okay, I stop work and I use my savings, which is probably not the way to do it. But anyway, hopefully it will pay off. Not hopefully, but usually hard work and dedication. And even if it doesn't pay off, like in 2020, it was heartbreaking. And yes, you lost money. But at the end, like, I think you learned so much more than... any money could pay for it as well, you know? Doesn't make sense.
Well, let's, should we go back and zoom in on some of the early years in Germany?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you're growing up in, whereabouts in Germany?
The bottom, south.
Right, and you're a sporty kid, you're into inline skating?
Or anything.
And just anything skating. And everything. Were you like naturally talented or naturally fast or anything, or...
I don't know. I grew up in a very small village with about 800 people. So it was very small. And I guess you just, kids just having fun, really. You know, there was no pressure. Mom never said, oh, you need to go and do your running, you know, go athletics or dance class. Or it was all self-driven. And I just loved playing, hang out with my mates. They were mainly males. And I played soccer, basketball, volleyball. I loved the team sports and I also loved athletics and gymnastics, doing your own individual sport. And yeah, I love skateboarding. Like, just having fun, I guess. Mm. But all quite low-key. I knew I was quite good running, like at 800s, but even at the competitions we had, and when I was running the best, they would say, oh, you need to come to get better. You need to get to a different squad, and, you need someone to drive you there. And mom was like, I can't do that. Like, we are working. You got two older brothers. They go to soccer. I'm not here to be your chauffeur, So it was just like, okay, that's fine. I'm just gonna keep having fun. And I was happy with just being that kid that just turns up every now and then in some races. Yeah.
Yeah. We can talk about this in as much or as little as you want. The eating disorder. Where did that begin?
Oh, my eating disorder. Yeah. So that came about. I just left school. I think I was like 15. So I finished school early, and I guess. Do you mind? I mean, how it came, or like?
Yeah.
It was. I guess. For me, it was a valve. Like I got funny pictures in my head and made me kind of really sick and nauseous, and I just wanted to throw up, and that's what I did. And I guess that got triggered because of my past, which came up when I was a teenager, like just 14 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to chat about that? Or?
Yeah, I can chat. Yeah. Pretty open about it because it's made me who I am.
And yeah. And I've read some articles about it and stuff, but I'm sure every time you chat about it, I'm sure it's exhausting. Probably more exhausting than running goats pass. It's not a nice thing to chat about. So you start having flashbacks when you're 14 about some sexual abuse that happened when you were real young.
Yeah. Which was from the neighbor. He was like a granddad to us, just looking after us. And it just happened when I was 4 or 5 years old, which at the time I had no idea. You know, kids are so innocent. Like, they're just so young, they don't really know. And even they think it's funny. But when you get older, and I guess that's what happened to me, I forgot all about it till I became a teenager and had my first boyfriend. And we were playing basketball at the time, and he grabbed me just to protect that I don't throw a hoop. And that movement from holding me from behind just triggered everything. I was like, what is going on? And every night I was just like thinking about that movement, what happened. And every day I would it just unraveled more and more. And I was like, wow. And it just made me from this happy child to some, I would say, probably severe depressed within days, Like, even mom was like, what's going on with you? And I was like, I think I'm going psycho. Like, absolutely. I think I'm watching too many horror movies or psycho things, which I didn't. But I was like, wow, something is not right. And then one night she asked me again, and I just unloaded. And she's like, oh, is that what happened in the past? And I was like, shell-shocked. It's like, what do you know from the past? And then she said, oh, yeah, when you were little, this is what happened next door. And you told us all about it. And then Dad went over and confronted him. And he had all his excuses. But then, of course, we got told not to go there anymore. And, of course, he had triggers. He was like, oh, come with me and I'll give you lollies upstairs, da-di-da-di-da. You know, like the most normal common thing for a 4 year, like to go with, and like, oh, this is all cool. And because it wasn't, nothing was painful, or I had no idea. But that was the beginning. And I guess my poor parents, I guess they punished for life as well, but I've forgiven them. And
how do you forgive them? Because they must be, I don't know, I suppose, like, if you're I'm probably projecting here, but if you look at it from from their perspective in a place of compassion, maybe they're like, oh, if we go to the police and the authorities, it's just going to drag you through years and years of this. Maybe it's best just to confront him and tell him to stay the fuck away and leave it at that. But
I guess for them, they didn't really know how to deal with it. And for them, the best and easiest for them was to just shut it all down and nothing happened. And we don't talk about it.
Sweep it under the...
Because they just moved there and they were worried about what the neighbors think, this whole, what other people think. And we don't want to be the people, they're like, oh, So that was all sweet till I was 14 and had this unraveled trauma coming up. And because it affected my life so much, and I guess I didn't know how to deal with it, that I just started having panic attacks and hyperventilating every time a guy would come close to me, or even teachers. It was just awful. And I've seen psychologists, and then later down, I guess I told the, you know, talked to the psychologist, and then he would do the job. He would go and tell my parents off, but that had a whole major ripple effect on me coming home, still living at home when you're 14, you know. I got severely punished for that. And I was like, oh my God, I've got no one to talk to. So then when I left school, and then the funniest thing is I left school and I didn't really know, I had no purpose in life. And mom was like, oh, just do a job, do any job. And I got your job in the bakery as an apprentice. And I was like, okay. And that was probably the worst thing for me with an eating disorder. But you just don't know, you know. But anyway, so I did this apprenticeship and it was hard work. You've got long hours. I couldn't do my sport. I guess it was a major thing too, because sport, maybe that's why sport kept me kind of going and alive. And I was thriving with sport because I could just let go of my energy, and maybe deep down, that was the unconscious to pack it all up. And it's like sport was sort of my wealth, you know what I mean? Even at class, I remember a teacher gave me the only permission. Like, I was the only child that could get up and walk around, because I would just break all the chairs all the time from gouging and annoying my classmate, because I was just like so so vibrant. Anyway, long ramble.
That's good. What's your relationship like with your parents now? Like, you know, have you forgiven them? Is it okay? Or is it always going to be a little bit weird?
No, I guess that's why I'm on the other side of the world as well. So it wasn't just the language, but it was also sort of an escape. How far can I go to not be away from my parents? I mean, you know, I guess it took me a long time to come to peace with all of this and even understanding them. And then I revel their situation, and when you unravel their situation, it's like, oh, there's no wonder we're all a bit not effed up, but you know, a bit screwed up, because if you look at their lives and what they've been through, it's like, oh my God, but no one talks. No one. That's, I find it so hard that we don't talk about certain things, or even as a family. And I guess that's what I learned through therapy, and I'm happy to talk about these things now. Talking has helped me to just get it out of me rather than suppressing it, or you know, like,
you're bottling it up. That's been a big Kiwi thing over the years as well. We're very good at just bottling things up.
There's this whole mental health, you know, like this. Yeah, you just have to, you really have to talk about it. Let it out. It's like this when you open a champagne bottle, you know. And I guess with the eating disorder, that helped me to deal with the pressure. That was like this instant, just the pictures, not pressure, but it was like a pressure release. Like for me, it felt like, I guess when you are taking drugs or drinking, it felt like I was just numbing myself. And I guess first it started with just not eating, or whatever I ate, I was throwing up, or even just water. I just needed that throwing up feeling, which is so bizarre, because now when I get sick, I'm like, oh my God, how did I do this on the purpose? You know, like, you know, when you get a tummy back and you're like, it's awful. And anyway, but it was this, that was like my release of just, I don't know, being like a quick fix. And the more I did it, the more I felt just released. Like, just this throwing up feeling was like my key of just surviving.
Like scratching an itch.
Yeah. Well, I did cut myself back then in the days too. Like, I was just like cutting and doing self-harm a lot just to deal with that pain. Like, that, I guess when mom told me that they knew about it, it was like someone just rammed a knife into my heart. And it's my parents. And you think they are the people they're supposed to look after me and support me. You know what I mean? Like, if I would have a child and I would find anything, I would hear anything about it, I think I would kill. You know, like, I wouldn't.
100%.
I would be like, okay, I can't kill this guy. But I would be, wow, I think, man.
That's why it's so hard to understand, because it's you were a defenseless little girl, and you did everything right. Like, you told the people in a position of power, still nothing was done for you, and that's fucking heartbreaking. And I don't know how you get past that mentally, but shit, you've done the work, haven't you? But it's like you lost your entire teenage years, really, didn't you?
Oh yeah, that was Yeah, sometimes I feel like I have some catching up. No, I don't. Some catching up to do.
No, but I suppose this is the teenage years, which you sort of lost with sort of your university of life. Like, you went through all this adversity then, and it's made you the incredible, absolute savage that you are today.
It's hard work. 9 months of therapy.
Yeah.
Like I was locked away for 6 months, and then I had 3 months in sort of a living area where you're on the clinic side, but you're more introduced into a normal living, but you've got doctors and everything there. And then I got put into like, it's not an orphanage home, but they put young teenagers there to grow their, you know, to learn their life skills again and get a job. And they have I had two caregivers looking after me and helping me with guiding me through life again. And I got to thank them a lot. They're still alive. I'm still in contact with them.
They must be so proud. Have they indicated how proud they are? Like,
oh yeah, one of the guys, his name is Bernd, and he got me back into running. And
is this when you were a smoker?
Oh yes, yeah.
Hard to imagine the three-time coast to coast being a smoker.
I think I have a bit of addictive personality. I think I still have it. But when I do things, I don't do them halfway. I all in or nothing.
Yeah. Oh my god!
Just good and bad.
were you a good smoker? Like how many a day?
A few packages.
Oh my god, that is disgusting.
Mainly at the weekends when you're out partying, okay. You know, like, yeah. And then always with coffee and alcohol, you know, when you're just socializing, yeah. Yes.
You're a radix athlete.
Yeah.
Things have changed.
Oh, they've changed tremendously. I mean, I had a long time now, you know, like, we're talking about 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but you had to do the work, though. No one else could do that for you, eh? Yeah, I mean, it would have been easy just to stay down there and wallow in your self-pity or be a victim or whatever, and you chose the hard way and you had to do the work, but you had to do it yourself.
Yeah, and it's so hard, and I understand when people are depressed, you know, like when they say, oh, I just can't do it. Like, oh, I don't know if it's a life lesson, but everything you do in life, sometimes it is hard work, and sometimes you just have to tick it off as you go and put one foot in front of the other and don't look at the big outcome. You're just gonna do it, as I said, you know, like even getting out of my eating disorder, it wasn't that they're like, oh, you have to completely stop from today, you know. It wasn't that they put me in a clinic and, you know, you're gonna be, you can't throw up anymore, whatever. It was actually quite amazing. They gave me like a diary, and I had to record everything, and I guess I went in there. I was 17 at the time, and then in the clinic I turned 18, but I was such a young child. You know, like, literally, I was the youngest with 70 women, only women, and they had all sorts of addiction from alcohol, drugs, medication, anything, you name it, obesity, anorexia, the whole spectrum. But they gave me again, they can only do so much. It's up to me what I do with it. Like, if I've got this one chance in my life and I either take it and work on it, and I know it's going to be hard, but hopefully I learn enough and be strong enough to come out, you know, that I can regulate or come out on the other side, like not come out, but establish myself well enough that I can have sort of a normal life by myself and not, you know, like without the addiction, that I don't think about the addiction, that the addiction doesn't, how do you say this? Sorry, sometimes I struggle with articulating myself.
Oh, you don't. I think you're doing great with the English. Yeah, it doesn't define you.
The addiction takes over you, and everything in life is based. You know, when I was 15, it wasn't about life anymore. For 2-3 years, I was like, not work, not friends, not family. I did not care. Well, all I cared was, when can I throw up? How can I throw up? How many times can I throw up? And it was this constant cycle before you go to bed. When you wake up, the first thing, it was basically all around your addiction. But how can I have, you know, like learning, how can I have a life with not thinking about this anymore and that I don't need this anymore as an outcome? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that was amazing when I went to the clinic. Like, that wasn't like your knife on your chest, like, no, cut it all, you know, like, and if you throw up, we're going to punish you. No, it was like, I guess this, it's, you take it, it's your guidance. Like, I recorded everything, and I was really open and honest. I guess that's a good thing about me. I am very open and honest, and I didn't want to let anyone down, and even my family. I want them to be proud of me, you know that. But for them, it was quite funny. It's like, oh, you go into a clinic, and you come out, you just go with, put the car into a garage and you come out and you're the old Simone again. It's like, no. So that was sort of, I guess, the first step into, the, you know, a new life. And then I, because they're like, oh, you can't come home and live with us again. I was like, no, I actually, if I come home, I'm going to be in the same circle in the same yeah. shit. It's like putting an alcoholic bag into the bar. It's like, and even my employer at the time, he was quite amazing because it was in the bakery and he said, he knew I was pretty sick and I had an eating disorder. And he's like, I give you the time, all the time in the world. You're just going to go and look after yourself and you can come back and finish off your apprenticeship whenever you want. You just go and look after yourself. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity too, but he's not alive anymore, unfortunately. He passed away. But amazing, amazing boss. Hard, but I learned so much.
Yeah.
And then with the clinic, yeah, the team was amazing. Like the, I have to say, like the help I had, it was just, yeah, next level. It's like, I mean, it's hard, I guess. It's like over here, you know, first shit needs to happen before they take action. Like I had to collapse in a club, which is quite funny, in a nightclub. In order.
By the way, can I just say it's not that funny?
But to get an immediate a prescription into a clinic, you know, we were fighting for half a year with the support team I had, and they're like, oh, we just put you on a waiting list, she's not bad enough, you know, she's not bad enough. It's like, you hear this so often here with the health system, it's like, oh, people, it's okay, you know, they're still walking, they're still breathing. It's like, when they say I have a problem, or you know, when they call out for help, you should not just put them on hold. But I guess, I don't know if we need more educated or, you know, doctors or psychologists, I don't know. But anyway, I don't want to go there now. But I had this amazing team with me and amazing psychologist nurturing me through this whole process, through the 6 months. And first I thought, oh, after 4 weeks, I can't wait to get out of here. After 2 months, and I keep extending and extending because I got more into it. And I guess you just felt so safe in there, you know. Suddenly you're just like this little chicken blossoming again. And it's funny because I turned all my sort of feelings and everything off. So when I was up there in the clinic, we were living on the top of a hill, I put on my rollerblades on one day and I decided I'm gonna rollerblade down to the next village. And it was pretty steep, and I realized while I was braking on the rollerblades, my brakes were all disappearing and I had no more brakes. And kid you not, it was the first time I actually feared for my life for I don't know how many years, because I guess what I haven't also said, like, I tried to do a suicide attempt when I was 14. Yeah. So that didn't work. But anyway, I just wanted to die, literally. You know, after this whole, I just had no life purpose. But anyway, I was so happy. And I had to run off into a paddock and tumble to, and I was all bruised and, you know, scarred up and with cow shit and all shit. I came back to the clinic and people were like, oh my God, what happened? It's like, I was just being, it was like, oh my God, I just feel fear. I want to be alive. It's like,
yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
So, yeah, one of these memories was like, oh, that's actually quite severe.
So it's almost like an epiphany in a way, because suddenly it's like, yeah, you felt like you had nothing worth living for, and then suddenly it's like you realize, faced with potential death, you didn't want to die.
Yeah, it's like, oh man, I do really want to live. Like, and I had a few other light bulb moments where I'm like, one of my best friends I grew up with on the streets, she was severely in love, and just seeing her with her partner being so happy, I was like, I want to be like this one day. So I had a few amazing key moments where I'm like, no, I actually... So, you know, the anorexia or bulimia, it was all there for a purpose. I just didn't know what to do anymore. I just... You know what? It was my only coping mechanism, like this pain and this... Oh, and also because I felt so ashamed of the body and... I guess because someone took over you and did all these funny things with you. And, you know, like when you get the feelings and sensation and, oh, it was all mixed up. Where I'm like, this, I couldn't look under the, I could look in the mirror, but I couldn't look underneath my neck, basically. I just hated it. Like, I just, it was disgusting. Which now, pretty proud of my body.
It does amazing things. But,
amazing things, and what we know what we humans are capable of, and just even what happened in the past. Yes, it's been there, and it's a scar. It's always going to be there. But I learned, I know it's 10 years now, but it's becoming less meaningless and less hurtful, if that makes sense. Like, I can happily talk about it now and don't break out into tears. And you know what?
It's sad
and it's emotional, but it's like, yeah.
Was there a while where it was still hard to talk about?
Oh, yeah. And even then, not long ago, a few years ago, or maybe a year ago, I had to do a course online for work about, what was it, some safety procedures when we work with kids as a swim school teacher, and, you know, with violence and how we can potentially spot certain things when kids have been abused or punished or, you know, like, and it just didn't ring the bells, but I got really emotional. Like, oh my God, I feel so sorry for these youngsters. Like, you know, they don't know. And if I don't know how a grown up can take this away from any child, you know, and I guess they must be so uncoordinated or screwed up here to even think that way. It's like, or they have had the same thing happen to them. It's like, for me now, I think, would I do this to anyone because this happened to me? I could not. I would probably kill the other person, you know. And I always think, man, if I not kill them, I shouldn't say this on a podcast, but you know, like, yeah, I definitely had some thoughts, like, if something happens to even my niece at home, I was like, man, your auntie will come and cut their balls off.
Is the old neighbor in Germany still alive?
Oh, no.
No,
he died long time ago. Yeah.
Was he ever held to account, or did he ever face?
No, that's, no. I guess, another thing which I guess that made me so, how do you say, angry and upset about it, because he got no punishment for it. He just happily died. Well, he probably wasn't happy. I don't know, but, you know, he died before this all unraveled. And then even still, the neighbors are still good friends, which is great, with my mom and dad. And I don't even know if they know to this date, to be honest. I have no idea. And
so it's like a family secret.
Yeah, it's a topic. Well, not anymore. And it hasn't been for a long time, because I talked about
it. It's your story to tell.
Yeah. Which I think it's actually a good story, and more people should be brave enough, and, you know, because it's not. It shouldn't be normal. It shouldn't happen.
Like, no, absolutely, it shouldn't. And your parents, are they full of like guilt or shame or regret or remorse? Have they verbalized how they feel?
Yeah, it's hard. I think they're not good talking about their feelings. They just, I guess, must be in a generation thing. They're quite hard on themselves, and they're probably like, oh, we just had to move on. It's like when you go to war, you just have to, you know, that happened, bomb went off. But we have to survive. You know, like, it was a bit like just putting on the carpet, move on. And then they're a bit, you know, religious. So then they go to church and talk to whoever and think it's all good. It happened. And I get this. It happened in the past. It's now, I guess, how we try and be positive. You know, what happened in the past, you can't change it. I know. But if you haven't, like, for me, I can't just, like, if I probably, oh my God, imagine this wouldn't happen when I was 14 and I would unravel this now. Oh my, it would be a disaster. Imagine I would have these flashbacks now, you know, like having a partner, and or imagine having a child, you know, like, anyway. Yeah. So I think I'm glad it happened, and it made me who I am today. And,
You lost some years, which are really cool years in a person's life, though, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's probably a common thing these days that you are 13, 14, 15, and you are partying. Like, I think I was pretty happy. I had parties, and even now I love parties. I don't do them right now so much because I'm too focused on the event.
Like a carb loading party the night before an event.
Yeah, I probably give that a miss.
So what's your mental health like now? Is it pretty good?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have my ups and downs, but who hasn't got them, you know? And I guess the past definitely has left some, how do you say,
scars?
Definitely some scars, and I have to admit, I have massive trust issues, which a friend always calls me up. She will laugh about this, Emily. It's like, it's okay, Simone, and then she gives me a big hug, so you can trust me, and even my partner. But I definitely I struggle with, not on a daily basis, but, you know, because I'm open and honest, and I guess it helped me to even overcome what I've been through in the past, because the more I talk, and rather than piling it up, and whatever goes on up here, sometimes I blurb it out, and sometimes it's maybe not a good thing to blurb it out what goes up here, but at least it comes out, you know what I mean? Like, especially for my poor partner, but he then can kind of puts it into play. Like, that's something, don't worry about it. You know, like, which I worry about it.
Yeah.
Or when I say, oh, I can't, I struggle to trust them, all of these people probably have some mischief up for me, or they want to dope me. You know, like, as an example, it's like, no, why would they? They're your friends. But, you know, it's so creepy. It's like, so I still have certain things.
It's your like default setting.
Yeah, and I feel like when I get more tired and more stressed, or, you know, like not enough sleep, or sleep is a big thing, I get more and more, I guess it's when people get anxious, and I guess anxiety creeps up. I was like, why should I have anxiety? There's nothing, you know, nothing scary. It's like, I guess it's just me. It's like, oh, you need to just dial back, have good food. You know, there where nutrition comes in as well. Like, nutrition has so much more in life than just feeding ourselves. Like, nutrition plays a massive role in your overall well-being, mental health, especially mental health. Oh, sorry, I get so aggravated about this. Positive way.
No, it's true. It's true, because everyone has good days and bad days. And when I'm having a bad day, I think, fuck, if I wasn't physically fit and doing all the things that I know are good for my own personal mental health, imagine how much worse I'd feel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So one thing I noticed about you, so you flew up from Wanaka for this podcast today, and on the plane you're reading a book about resilience. Now, it's hard to imagine a more resilient person than you. I mean, you've won the Coast to Coast 70 times. You do these insane God's Own races. You've done all this work that we talked about in your teenage years. What are you reading a resilience book for? What do you still need to work on?
I guess, you know, I feel like we probably gonna learn, like, a human, like, for me, I thought when I grew up, it's like, oh, the adults, they know it all, and you've finished learning. Now I guess I'm an adult. I'm 43, and I feel like, oh my god, there's so much to learn, you know. And that's what I want to, you know, even for the coast or for anything in life, maybe there's one key element in there that just gives me that other, not resilience, but that other little key to keep my thoughts more in control, or keep me more in the moment, or motivate me more, or to bring out something else what I want to do after my coast or racing or training, you know, like. So, you know, it's good. It's like I want to evolve, and I'm kind of searching for what else is there. You know how we listen, you know, probably a good example, like, my partner tells me something I should do, and then I go, someone else tells me the same thing. I was like, oh, that's a great idea. And he's like, I just told you the same thing, you know, but I heard it. Somehow it's a different voice or through a different lens. And yeah, it's like.
Yeah, when your partner says it, say, oh, what do you know?
Yeah. And I just listen to him or her. And he's like, I just told you the same thing. You could have saved your money, or, you know, like.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get to your we'll get to your partner, and we'll zoom in on him in a second. This is Marcel, right?
Yes, Marcel.
He was like a male version of you. He's retired now, but he's on all your support crews and stuff. But he was a savage as well when he was a competitor.
Oh, he's still a savage.
Yeah. Okay, but what would your message be to anyone who is listening to this podcast and is at their version of rock bottom right now?
Rock bottom.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's rock bottom's different. Like, it's hard to imagine like a rock bottom that is deeper than what yours was. But you know, everyone has it at some point. So if someone might be hearing this at that moment for them,
probably lots of messages. I just, like, I know it sounds awful. Like, just have to keep hanging in there. And I guess what I said before, like, sometimes you can't see the light, but you just have to break it down. And you don't look at the weeks or the months. You look at every day. Sometimes you take it down in hours. Break it down. I just have to survive till lunch. Not that you say after lunch you're going to kill yourself. No, that's not. I don't mean that. But just, I would definitely reach out. Try and your best friends if it's too much for them. The medic, you know, like, there's so many helplines now these days. Definitely, I think what helped me is talking. Like, even in my earlier years, even, you know, with my eating disorder or in between, I found this amazing lady, which was sort of a coach, an athletic coach, and she was sort of my talking point too. Again, I got punished for talking to her, but, you know, I just needed to talk, and that was good. You know, I just needed to get this off my chest. And it doesn't matter, I guess I wouldn't talk to anybody about my problems. But, yeah, it's like, I know it can be hard and horrible. And I probably had severe depressions, or not long ago I had a few weeks where I was pretty low, and even my partner was a bit worried. And I was like, man, what's going on? I think it had a hormonal there's a hormonal imbalance, which we try and work out right now. Maybe actually I can talk to Radix about this regarding food later on. It's actually a good point. But, you know, it was quite a hard time where I'm like, this is so not me, you know, where you're really down and you're not happy. You do your training, you go to work and nothing satisfies you and you just can't see the light of the tunnel. Everything is just dark and you feel you don't belong. You feel no purpose and people telling you and you're like, but I don't feel it. It's awful. I can totally relate to this and it feels awful and I just want to go and take it off them or give them a hug. You know, someone, even just having someone there to listen and give you a hug or just some love. I think we need more love. But okay, that I'm getting off topic. What's my message? That's a good one. Don't give up. That's one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know it's hard, but I guess that's what I'm standing here for too. Like if it was hard, but if it, you know, if it was easy, everyone would do it. Everyone would do it, but it's not easy. That's why even me with competing or anything in life, lots of people don't do it because it's hard. Even with the people who were successful, they didn't become successful because they did nothing. Usually, you know, they put their time, they put their whole life on hold too. You know, they're so obsessed, you know. I'm going off topic again.
No, you're right. Sorry. You're right. You're good. That's good stuff.
But yeah, just hanging in there and keep breathing. I think that's another thing. Sleep lots. And just don't give up. And surround yourself with good people. And if you put it out there, if you got hope, if you want to be alive and live, then you're going to make it happen. But it's hard work. It's not going to be easy and it's not going to come to you flying. Like, absolutely not. Like, that's not what I thought, but what I've been through, or like in the clinic, it was years of, you know, like that was just the beginning, but it was really hard work. And it's sometimes you go, you feel like you're walking through, but you know, you have 10 good steps and then you have 100 steps. They go, boom, it beams you back. But it's the keep on going. Like, that's so my empathy I trying to put on is like, you just have to. I know it's not pretty and it's not easy, but you just have to keep going.
And you have to do it yourself as well, don't you?
Yeah. That's the thing. Is like, as I said, I'd love to come and give you a hug and you can anytime reach out to me. I'm always there to listen. But it's, no one can take this burden off you. That's the thing. Like, even if you're depressed, like even my partner, he's there, he's caring for me. He's showing me so much love. But, you know, all he wants is like getting my bloody head. And it's like, take it. And I'm going to run with it. I dig a hole and throw it away. Or, you know, just help me. It's like, I know I have to go through this myself. And yeah, it's okay. But yeah, it's like you really want a good friends and teams around. And just talking about, I think, opening up and just getting it off your chest. And because even that's hard for me to say, hey, I'm not well. Like, you know, you've achieved so much. And just not long ago, a few weeks ago, I'm like, I feel like this is not good. Like, I might have to see someone else. Like, you know, I need some bloody help. I mean, I got out of it, but I was like, this is quite spooky. You know, like,
yeah, it's ongoing. It never properly goes away.
Yeah,
it's always there.
Yeah, it's like, but even the system here is a bit, it's a bit sad. It's like, it's not as easy as, not, I mean, nothing is easy anyway, but it was much easier in Germany to get some professional help and have access to psychologists than here. It's also a major money thing. It's like, how can people afford this?
Yeah.
Here? I don't understand. I don't know, because it's, and then if you go through the system, like I've been, when did I get here? In 2027. And then maybe early 2010, 11 or 12, I had another little dip where I'm like, far out, I think I have to see, you know, I need some professional help. And it's like, I see you once in a month. And it's like, once in a month? You're kidding me. I would be dead in a month. Yeah. Okay, I won't be dead. But, you know, it's man, I guess just, anyway, I don't know how we solve this problem. But, yeah, it is a bit.
Never goes away. Jeez, your teenage self, though, if she was sitting in that rehab facility and someone said to her, when you're 43, you're going to be living in New Zealand, you're going to be winning this event year after year after year, you're going to be an amazing person, you're going to have an amazing partner. Shit. I mean, it's a pretty good ending, or it's a pretty good development rather in life. Like, it would be hard to see at that point when you're at your rock bottom to see how your life is now and how it's evolved, or largely through work that you've done on your own. But it's been incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's cool. You should be proud of yourself.
Thanks. I think that's, I don't know if that's a bad thing. I had a form of power. It's like, when are you ever proud of yourself? You know, like, I am. I have these moments and I'm very grateful. And I guess that's what I want to pass on to others as well. And you can, you know, even now with the message, like, I obviously didn't have the perfect sentence here for the message I want to give to people who have the lowest of the low. But I guess the experience I had and me showing up and fighting on it, or even with events coming back, even if you get knocked down and even things don't fall out of my DNF. And so it's a good, hopefully it inspires other men, women, trans, whatever, human, to, if they have a low and think, oh, life is not worth it, to, it's like, no, everyone has worth, like, you're supposed to be here on this planet. So it's sad when you hear that people had no other option, you know. And
yeah, just, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. Tell us about Marcel. So you guys met in China like 20 years ago?
Oh, not 20 years ago. Probably in 2000, I think 11 or 12.
That's okay, when I, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was it?
More than 10 years ago, because I just counted last night. We've been together for 9 years.
Right. What was the event in China? That was like a...
It was one of these multi-sport events, a stage race over 4 days. And he was racing in a different team. Winning team, you know. And I just came in, got one of these wild cards, and I was just happy to be there. And it was actually quite funny, because I heard about him before I actually saw him in person and met him.
Because he was like a rock star, right? He was really, really good.
Yeah. And he looked pretty good. He still looks good. But he had this long blonde. Could you believe it? I probably shouldn't say his age, but he's his 50s, and he's still got kind of blonde. He's got no gray hair. He's got a gray beard sometimes when he grows it, but he's got still blonde hair. You know, like, it's unbelievable. But back in the days, he had this blonde, long angel hair. Like, just, not that I have anything about outfits, but, it, you know. Anyway, he was a standout, and he's quite muscly, you know. Not that I'm worried about muscles at all, but, you know, just the overall good human. And my point was, at the time I was working, I just started working as a lifeguard at the Wanaka pool, and my workmate Dougal Allen, which you might know.
Oh, yeah. Another coast-to-coast champion.
Yeah, back in the days, we worked at the Wanaka pool as lifeguards. he said, oh, my God, you need to meet my teammate. He's German. I was like, pfft. I don't want a bloody German guy. I don't want to, like, it would be nice to maybe meet him, but I don't, you know. And he's like, you guys could be boyfriend, girlfriend material. I was like, absolutely no way. Like, I don't want a German boyfriend. So he's like, you guys are just so like each other. Like, absolutely. And before I went to become a lifeguard, I was working, which is quite funny. You will laugh about that. Or maybe not. I was working in organic bakery or organic shop in Wanaka, which was called Soul Food, and I was the baker there, making specialized gluten-free baking. And I always made a lot of sourdough loaves, and Dougal was like, I'm gonna, well, he started actually before I met Marcel. He took a loaf with him to bring it to China for Marcel, because Marcel loved homegrown sourdough bread. And that's how we kind of met, but not in person. The bread was sort of the message in between. Pretty good bread. He was like, oh, she's making pretty good bread. But yeah, quite hilarious. But funny that, you know, I did an apprenticeship at a bakery way back with my eating disorder. Didn't finish it. And then here I am in New Zealand going back to a bakery. And I got residency with that job, becoming, being a specialized baker.
Right. Oh, and you mentioned you worked at the Wanaka pool as well. Tell me, as someone that's been a lifeguard at a pool, what happens when there's a code brown? Do they shut down the whole pool? You scoop it out and carry on? What goes on?
I guess there's a procedure, but first you get all the people out. And usually they just look at you and it's like, well, I'm not blowing the whistle for no reason. Usually.
Get out!
And ideally you don't want to scream into the hall like, there's a gold brown. So you don't, you know?
Is that the official name, by the way?
Yes. We've got all these code names, like, yeah.
What else is there? Give us some intel.
Only three: code red and code yellow and code brown.
What's code yellow? Just we?
No, it has more to do if a lifeguard is down.
Okay.
And if there's a real accident, like someone has a customer, then it's a code red.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Wow. Yeah.
So now we're calling drowning. We're not like, you know, we've got these code names.
Yeah.
And so then people have radios everywhere at the front desk, and then they kind of know what's going on, you know, like sort of. Yeah.
Because are you actually sort of saving anyone in that job, or are you mainly just telling people off, like, don't run, no bombs?
It's a combination. It's actually, I know I sometimes take the piss a bit with, I'm just a lifeguard, but it is, I guess, you've got a pretty big role because we are responsible to keeping people, you know, safe and minimize the risk and the hazards. And I guess heart attacks do happen occasionally. And I guess therefore that's when we jump in. So, or we are there anyway to minimize risk. But also if someone has a heart attack or stroke or whatever, that we are basically, you know, we see this thing, you know, getting as quick as possible.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah, more to, you know, minimize the risk and harm and the code browns. Yeah. Oh, yes. Do we still want to hear the procedure about the code browns?
Oh, yes.
So we get the people out and then we scoop as much as we can of the poop out. And then depends on the size, whatever. We definitely have to clear the pool 100%. They have to get out of the whole pool and we shut it all down. Chlorinate it, depends on the size and how bad. And then put the vacuum in. And shut it for the day, or yeah, it depends on size.
Shut it for the day. The size of the poo.
No, yeah. So we have two pools now. We have a new sports facility in Wanaka, and which is an upgrade from the old pool. We have now a 50-meter. We have a 25-meter lap pool, and we have a learner's pool. So mainly, these things happen in the learner's pool when we had swimming lessons, or any. You know, it's hard to. And I get it. It's sometimes hard when they're so excited. You know, like it just happens.
Kids, yeah.
But we only closed the little pool because they're all in separate tanks.
Mm.
So they don't mingle with each other. And we also have a spa. So all these other two pools, they stay open. And usually what we do, we move the lessons from the learner's pool, which is much warmer water, into the cold lap pool. So they can carry on. And if they don't want, they get their lesson usually, reimbursed.
Refunded.
And then, yeah, depends on the size and how, yeah, that's quite, you know, a quick fix, kind of.
Thanks. I was always curious. It's like, do they drain the whole pool? Is it shut for the day? Or?
It did modern, like, I grew up in Germany and, you know, every summer we went to the outdoors pools or even indoor pools. And I can't remember a single day that the pool was ever shut for code brown. It's like, what happened back in the days? Like, did they just ignore it, or did they not have the tools or the...
Scoop it out and move on.
Yeah. I don't know, but we have... It seems like sometimes a seasonal thing or period where there's month nothing. Funny that we talk about code browns now, but, you know, and then you have one every week or one every day, and it's like a few years ago we had this weekly pooper. I'm not kidding. Every week on a Thursday afternoon we had a poop, sort of different, same lane, different spots. So I got quite intrigued in figuring out who the pooper was, and I found the pooper.
Oh my God, really? Was it intentional or accidental?
I think he thought it was just funny. Yeah, intentional, yeah. But his mom was very embarrassed.
Like, how old was the kid?
He was quite old. Like, for the age, he was actually not just a toddler anymore. But, yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, but he admitted that he did that. Yeah. And I did say to his mom, I looked her in the eyes. I said, I'm not saying it's your son. But, you know, because they get so wired up and then they're like, whoa, why is it closed? It's like, I'm not the parents. Sorry, not that I want to, you know, but it's like, isn't that your job to educate the kids, like, not to poop in the pool? And I just looked at her like... Little, not Johnny, but, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't say Johnny. It was like, isn't it your job to you know. Like,
that's so funny, a serial pooper. Did he get a lifetime ban?
No. And it's actually not the, you know, she did take him out, which is the wrong thing to do. Like, he should have just given him some consequences that he can't come, or that he can't play after the lesson, you know, rather than taking him out of the lessons. Like, no, he just give him to the lesson so he learns his purpose, like the swimming. He obviously needs to learn how to swim. But then, right, now he got the consequence because you've been pooping every Thursday into the pool. You can't play after the this, we're going to go straight. You know, that's how I would have felt rather than, you know, of course she was embarrassed, but it was nice that she actually emailed us and I'm so sorry. You know, like, it was so funny.
Wow. Hey, there's one other thing that you've been involved with recently, and I completely missed this until I started preparing for this chat, but there's a TV show, a reality TV show on TV3 called Tracked. With Vinnie Jones, and you were on this.
Yeah.
It was sort of like I don't know how you'd describe it. Maybe it's sort of like Survivor versus like Bear Grylls, Man versus Wild or something. How would you describe Tracked?
Yeah, I've never watched anything of Bear Grylls. I always know about him or the name, you know. Tracked. So I guess it's a team of group of people. Like there were 8 teams in a pair, 2 of them. Like, sorry, 2 in a pair, they get released in the beautiful, you know, countryside of New Zealand, and you have a map, and on the map there's an extraction point you need to get to. Usually the episode, like, the shoot was for 2-3 days, so you had to make your way from where they drop you off to that extraction point in those 2-3 days. But what they also did is, of course, it's where the name comes from, Tracked. They released a set of trackers behind you.
Like SAS Army.
Yes, some really high-tech, you know, like well-experienced special force. Pretty good guys to, you know, to find you, track you down.
Basically. Yeah, so you only have like a 1-hour head start.
Is yeah, right? I don't know. I think it was roughly an hour, but usually they release you and then you could see the helicopter coming in and I guess the fear kicking and it was like, let's run. But I guess the whole thing was like, you can't just run. The aim was not to run from your set off point to the extraction point, because also the extraction point would only be open, let's say we get released on a Monday, and it would open on a Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock till 3:30. So you had to be, you know, you had to be, I guess it didn't become a race. It was like you had to be running away from the tracker and leave no marks, kind of, or, you know, hardly any marks. And how do you move around in this terrain, which was like a little hamster, you know, like you had boundaries. So you were only allowed to play in this area. I guess the main thing was to hover around and try not to get tracked till you make it to that evacuation point. But what they also did, I guess, to spice things up and make it a bit more interesting, they gave us tasks. Like, we had to collect some try marks. They were these silver big try marks. And they had sort of not an advantage, but they kind of played an advantage when you made it into the following episode when you didn't get tracked. Anyhow, then they also had these control boxes. They are red and green, which they are like the size of, you know, a little lunch boxes, you know, for the kids they take to kindergarten. That's
like a Sistema.
Yeah. And have you ever done a Rogaine or an orienteering where you see those big orange flags?
Yeah.
So they are big, bright, you know. And imagine finding this little tiny lunch box in the tassics. So, you know, your nav had to be so spot on, you know, like quite good.
Yeah.
But I was so lucky to have my good friend and teammate Emily Wilson with me in that show. I don't know. We were both lucky to have each other. But anyway, so in these control boxes, they had a snitch card in it. And that became really good fun because when you found a control box and it had a snitch card in it, that became an advantage. And you could use them either to give the location of the trackers away, so you knew where they were, you know, depends on, based on your movement you were doing, or you could snitch put another team on a handbrake to stand down or give their location away. Mm. So it was really cool. Just another unique add-on to the game, if that makes sense. You know, it wasn't just hide and seek. It was like, it was a game between us all, you know? Yeah,
and it was hosted by Vinnie Jones. Did you have much to do with him, or was he just like dropped off to send you guys on your way? And
We didn't have too much to do with him. I guess he was the main actor, you know.
The main host here.
The main host. And he was there right at the start. I don't think he was at the finish. I think he's only at the finish when the boys win. Oh, I shouldn't say
this. Spoiler alert. Oh, no. As I said, I watch a fair bit of reality TV and I think I know what's going on, but I hadn't heard of this show.
Yeah.
When was it on TV? Was it early 2023?
June, July. Right. You can still watch it. You go on and...
this is how I watched it on TV3 on demand.
Yeah.
So did you have many, when it was broadcast, did you have many people come up to you on the street and say, oh, I recognise you from Tract?
Not so much in Wanaka, more in Christchurch. It was kind of funny. I was running and they're like, I guess they recognise sort of the hairdo. Not too overwhelming. I think Emily had quite a few. Yeah, but we didn't come. So we came in as the threat, me and Emily. So it was actually quite funny because when we applied for the show, we just applied. We were like, reality TV show. How funny would that be? And I was like, oh, why not? Let's just do that. So we put the application in, which we did on a Monday night. You know, just like, you have to film yourself and talk to the camera, which is not our greatest thing. But anyway, we did. And we're like, oh, let's just, you know, like, what could possibly, you know, go wrong or what could happen that we get in? We had no hopes, really. It was like, just do it. And then within less than 12 hours, on Tuesday morning at 8, we got an email from the lady that was selecting the teams. Like, right, can you guys be on a call in now or with some other, you know, with the producer, blah, blah. So, yeah, that was it. And then the ball just keep rolling. And then they're like, oh. So we were kind of, we had all these tests with the psychology and other things. And health and blah, blah. And it seems to be that we're in and they're like, oh, we do the finalizing in January. And then we didn't hear from them. And then, you know, we were busy doing the coast. And then after the coast, we're like, okay, we're making new plans for this year. It was like, we emailed them back and they're like, oh, yeah, sorry, we dropped you guys because we changed the agenda. And we're like, okay, nice, good that you guys tell us or something, you know. Anyway, and then I said to Emily, you know what, I bet you they're going to call us back last minute because we are in the country. They knew how flexible we are with work, so we can literally drop the pin and be there, you know, 24 hours if we have to, and we can have as much time off it. You know how it's actually quite hard because you can't, who can leave work and say, oh, I might be back in 6 weeks, or if I get caught, I'd be back next week. You know, like, it was really hard to...
You'd need a very understanding employer,
yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, I was like, not fuming, but I was like, kind of laughing. It's like, I bet you they're going to call us back because of COVID. And then also, because it's an international thing, so they had 4 international teams and 4 Kiwi teams. And I said, look, those teams from overseas, they will be... they will be like mind blown and they will actually have a hard time to do this properly, like, and they would have to do so much add-on work, whatever, which us, which is out there, we ride in the element, like, they don't have to worry about us at all, like, we're like an easy catch for them. And anyway, that's what happened. In May we got this lovely email. Hello, do you guys still want to be on the show?
And you did really well. You finished in second place. You seemed gutted, by the way, when you got caught. So you didn't win the $100,000 prize. What did you and Emily want the $100,000 prize for? You wanted to set up a business.
Oh, you know, any money is good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know. You can talk it high up or you can talk it down. It's like, oh, it's only 100 grand, 50 each. Then you pay tax. Oh, it's actually not that much, you know. But then it's like, for me, it would be, you know, even for Emily, it's like, wow, we could do so much. Yeah, we started the business, which is called Level Up, where we do clinics for all sorts of, not just women, like any human being, to upskill their, not upskill, but sort of, you know, like teaching more life, I call it, I guess, life skills, taking them out into nature, learning how to nav and be more self-sufficient and trusting themselves and, you know, like being brave, doing certain things they were probably scared to do before, or getting ready for a race or an adventure race or like the coast, or and mentoring them through them. And passing on the skills we learned because we had so much support and input from other amazing humans. I just want to kind of give back.
Pass on the knowledge. Yeah. Have you launched this? Have you started this?
That's launched a few years ago.
All right,
but
right.
We are a bit, I guess, still so driven with our own little goals and, you know, so busy because we both have such a busy lifestyle that I just started coaching. So I don't, you know, Emily can do her thing, and when we have time and fit together, then we can do more clinics. And then it's all right at the time. And for now, what I offer myself, I started coaching and mentoring. So yeah, that's, and I can just do this myself, so I don't have to, you know, rely on anyone. Yeah,
I think that'd be a great business for you guys to sink your teeth into when your competitive years are over, because you're both fantastic role models.
Oh, thank you.
So yeah, we've heard about your journey, and Emily, yeah, she's type 1 diabetic.
Yes. Yeah, she's got a lot to give. Oh, she's such an amazing human and just inspiration. I think there's like, for diabetes, like, I don't even know why New Zealand Diabetes would use it as a, you know, and sponsor or help her more with as anything, because she's such a great role model for anybody, you know, like kids, especially with diabetes, or moms and dads, and just even people themselves with diabetes, because she's living it. There's no excuse for Emily. she's like, not that she's like, oh, my, you know, ticking like, not running away, you know, not thinking like I'm going to die anytime soon, but she's really like getting it all in as much as she can. And I think it's fantastic to, there's no excuse, you know, like, she's not just because I have diabetes and I'm labeled. It's like, no, I can do this, you know, like,
and yeah, she's not letting it stand in the way.
Yeah. And it's probably, I don't know, similar to people who have a tough time or when they go through mine, it's like,
That's all right.
You know, it's like, man, some people, they have a certain condition, or I was listening to podcast last night about, what's her name?
Sophie Pascoe, the swimmer, yeah.
Yeah. And then when you interviewed
Chaz Dare.
Incredible. Like, you know, like they've lived with this every day, you know, and just how they overcome these things. Like, that's where I sometimes like, wow, man, I know it's all, I shouldn't put these things together, but it does sometimes. I know when you're in the deepest hole, sometimes I think they don't matter, and I get that, because then I feel like, oh yeah, whatever, it doesn't touch me. But now I'm like, man, it's incredible. So they inspire me, you know, like, yeah, they're really inspiring. Like,
oh, and you're going to inspire people as well, like with this chat. Yeah, one thing I've got from this podcast, another thing is that everyone goes through some sort of adversity. Mm. Everyone's dealing with some sort of shit in their life.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing what the human is capable of doing and getting past. So we've got Coast to Coast 2024 coming up. Fuck, there's so much pressure on you for that. I suppose expectation of other people, but also internal pressure. And then what after that? Gonna hang the canoe up? No, what are you?
Well, ideally, it was the plan last year to call this my last one. And I think I mentioned before, because I feel like I ticked all the boxes, and that was really rewarding. It's like, it's nice when you can finish on a high. So, and I guess it's where I put another bit of pressure on myself, which I don't know how it's going to go. I hope to. Of course, I want to win, and I know there's an amazing deep field out, an amazing women out there. They could all probably five win the coast, you know, very capable winning the coast this year. It would be nice for me to do it, to send it off. But this year, when I thought that's it, I got pregnant, but it didn't happen. You know, I lost it. And then I thought, oh, damn. And then I thought, oh, let's try this again. But then because you're so, it's such a mind fuck. It's awful. You know, I can understand when people say, oh, first I thought, oh, why is it so hard? It's like, I understand now why it's so hard when they lose have a miscarriage. And it's like, I guess I just drowned my sorrows jumping back into what I know and what I'm good at. So I just jumped back straight into racing. And then China came back up, and I just pushed it all aside. And I was like, oh, God, another year. So I know I'm old too, but who knows? We're just going to see what happened. But ideally, if that's not happening, and if it's not healthy, you know, like if it's not a healthy, normal process, whatever, that's fine. I'm good terms with that. But what I really like to do, and that's what I thought this year too, even on the last final bike ride, I'm like, I can't wait to be and support someone on this race, or even do it in a tandem, you know, and go together where you have a lot more fun. You can chit chat, or maybe not, but you know, you share and you just help, you know, you mentor someone through. That would be cool to do a school, you know, do with someone and mentor them through it, and just give back, you know, and invest a bit more. Like, yeah, that would be cool. And regardless what happened, with a human or not, maybe you can cut this out. But, you know, there's a lot more goals out there. Like, yeah, I just want to do more other things and just have time to be to do other things again, going to the hills. Because right now, all I do is I still work. I work at the campground in Wanaka, which just opened at the weekend. So that's gonna be quite a balancing act, which I haven't done last year. But I'm sure we can all work it out with my employer to get it, you know, to get the balance right. Of yeah, they're pretty cool. Which I did think and said, like, oh my God, what did I sign up for? I was like, oh my God. But I had a lot of playtime beforehand, so it's like, it's okay. And I'm sure with just talking about it. And they are super supportive. They want to see me doing well too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, well, good luck with what the future brings. Yeah, there's the Coast to Coast coming up, which I'm going to be eagerly watching this, and hopefully you can pull off the fifth Coast to Coast win. But whatever happens in the future, yeah, good luck with the family stuff as well. I hope that's successful as well. But whatever you do, I'm sure you're going to thrive and do well at, because you're an amazing person.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you'll also be the person that that caught the Wanaka Pool Thursday pooper. So yeah. That's another thing for your LinkedIn page.
Back in the days, at the old pool.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Simone Meyer, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Simone Meyer on the Dom Harvey podcast. Thanks so much for making it all the way through. Really hope you enjoyed this episode. Here's the truth. I love having these conversations with people I'm genuinely interested in learning more about, but ultimately it's for you. For you guys. If it wasn't, I'd have these conversations without the microphones and that'd be a more intimate affair. So because it is for you guys, if you ever have any feedback or constructive criticism, guest suggestions, sponsorship inquiries, etc., please do share. You can track me down on Instagram, DomHarveyNZ, or email me, DomHarveyNZ@gmail.com. And quick favour, if you don't do so already, could you subscribe to the podcast on your favourite platform and even give it a rating or review? Because all that stuff helps grow the podcast. Also, all these episodes are available to view on YouTube. So if you have a YouTube account, maybe subscribe to my channel. That would be so good. Okay, favour's over. Just before we go, this episode was made entirely possible by the team at Radix. Radix sponsors Simone and took care of all her travel arrangements for this chat, which I do appreciate. Simone is one of the elite sports community who have known about Radix and their stuff for years. It's only now that us regular people are learning about this incredible Kiwi creation from Hamilton. Protein powders, smoothie recovery powders, and the best freeze-dried meals in the world. Honestly, their breakfasts, the V9 range, are to die for. They're that good. If you want 2024 to be the year you bring your health and fitness goals to life, Radix can help. Check them out at radixnutrition.co.nz. Radix is spelled R-A-D-I-X. Elephant in the room, this is an ad, and Radix are paying me to say nice things about them, but I honestly mean what I say. I was a fan before they sponsored the podcast, and I will be a fan for life. Their products simply are the best. Radix, R-A-D-I-X. Check them out. Okay, that'll do us. Housekeeping over. Thank you very much for joining me on the Dom Harvey podcast, and I do hope to see you next time. See ya.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.